May it please the court, Mr. Tom Reedley will present argument for petition.
Well, maybe Mr. Spivey's going to do my job for me.
He's so used to being petitioned.
May it please the court, I'm Tom Reedley representing Amarillo Oil Company, the petitioner here. This case is being re-argued. It is an oil and gas case from the Panhandle Field of Texas, and it was, I think, when it was first argued, an important case. I believe it still is because it still represents the first title suit to reach this court in a controversy that's been described generally as the white oil controversy. The case before the court arises from a basic ownership fact that is true on this lease and common to a lot of leases in the Panhandle Field, and that is there are different owners of the leasehold right to produce gas versus the leasehold right to produce oil and casing head gas. In this particular case, my client, Amarillo Oil Company, owns the gas rights. It has exclusive leasehold title to the gas rights. And the respondent, Energy Agra, has the exclusive leasehold right to produce oil and casing head gas. In my view, there are two main issues before the court. The first one is, what is casing head gas as used in the controlling title instrument, a 1953 assignment? There are two possibilities there that the parties are contending for. Is casing head gas limited to the gas that's produced from an oil stratum with oil, which is the state statutory definition of casing head gas in effect since 1935? That's our position. Or is casing head gas all gas produced from an oil well at any depth, including gas produced from a zone that produces gas only? And that is Energy Agra's position. The second question is, if casing head gas is limited to the oil zone, as we say, does the brown dolomite rock layer on this particular lease produce any oil, or is it in fact a gas zone as we contended? Amarillo Oil sued Energy Agra in the district court on a quiet title theory, sought to enjoin the trespass of Energy Agra to prevent it from completing in our gas zone. The jury found against my client on the fact issue of whether the brown dolomite produces oil or not. The Court of Appeals sustained that without discussion of the evidence, but it went further. It held that Texas courts have no jurisdiction over this case because of the Railroad Commission classification of the Energy Agra wells as oil wells. And it viewed, apparently, this suit as a collateral attack on the well classification. Now, first of all, at the threshold, the Court of Appeals did not explain why it had no jurisdiction to interpret the title instrument in question. The 1953 assignment that conveyed to my client's predecessor the gas rights and the gas well reserved out oil and casing head gas rights. And the first question is, who tells us what that means? What does that instrument mean? What does casing head gas mean in that reservation? Now, the Railroad Commission cannot interpret a title document. It cannot award damages. It cannot address conversion. It cannot quiet title. The court apparently assumed without discussion that casing head gas meant all gas produced from an oil well. That's the only way it could have reached its jurisdictional holding. It seems to assume that what we're saying is that the well was improperly classified, and since that's an administrative matter, we have to go to the agency. But you don't even get there until you first interpret the title instrument. And that's our main position, or our first position in the case, that only the court, and ultimately this court, can settle what the title instrument in question means. What does casing head gas mean in that reservation? So that's the question we come to first. And I think it's the most important question in the case. It's the question that has the most significance to other litigation and to a lot of controversy in this area. I submit the best answer to that, the best way to approach it, is to view the assignment in the context of the undisputed facts about the history of this lease and the history of the field. The original lease, a 61-acre lease, was taken 1952, and it covered both oil and gas rights. There was no division between casing head gas and gas, ordinary gas, just regular gas rights. It was taken by Mr. Housie or Howes from Hodges, and the lessee drilled a well. He drilled a gas well, and he drilled it only in the upper portion of the reservoir, shown on this just a pictorial diagram here. The well at the far left depicts the original gas well drilled in 1952. And he drilled it into the Brown Dolomite Formation and completed it as a gas well. Had potential, I think, for 12 million cubic feet a day initially. That completion was considered to be part of the Panhandle Field Reservoir. And that field goes back a long way. It was discovered in the 1920s. It's a huge field. It's about 140 miles long. At one time, it was the largest known gas reserve in the world. It's also been one of Texas' largest oil producers. It's made up of different rock layers, and you'll hear these referred to. The Brown Dolomite is generally on top, and in this area of the field, down below that is the granite, sometimes the granite wash or fractured granite, distinguished between those two. Most of the oil in the field has been produced at the northeast edge of the field. And in certain low areas. This is like most fields where you have high areas and low areas. There's a general tilt over distance. So that and oil being heavier tends to migrate to the low areas and be trapped there. So there's some parts of the field where you can drill down and go through a gas zone and reach oil. There are perhaps other areas where there's only oil because it's so low that that's all that's there. And there are other areas where there may be only gas because it's so high. And in a tilted field, it segregates that way, so you'll have oil, water on bottom, and then oil, and then gas. Generally, the gas zone that is above the oil is referred to as a gas cap in a field. But in any oil field, whether it has a gas cap or not, there is some amount of gas that's in the oil zone. It's dissolved or trapped in the oil zone with the oil. It's kind of like the fizz in a Coke when you... As the liquid comes out, the gas bubbles out of that liquid because it's been under pressure. But and unlike the gas zone, the oil is the gas that's down in the oil has to be produced with the oil. In other words, you couldn't have severed the rights so that someone had the right to produce no gas, because when you produce that oil zone, some gas is going to come out with it. But unlike the gas zone, you can't seal that gas off. But the gas zone above it, there's no relationship to the oil production. If you don't shoot a hole in your pipe up in the gas zone, you won't produce it. So if you only shoot holes down where the oil is, you will produce the oil out of that and the gas that is with that oil, dissolved or trapped with that oil. Now back to the Hodges well. The original well, as I said, was completed only in the Brown Dolomite, the top section shown in green there. It produced gas only. In 1953, the year after it was drilled, the lessee sold the well to Amarillo Oil's predecessor, sold the well and the gas rights, the exclusive right to the gas rights. But the original lessee reserved the oil and casing head gas rights. And those rights kind of sat there for 30 years. It was assigned in 53, and not until, I think, 1981 or 1982 was when the first attempt was made to drill deeper and to make an oil well. At the time of the assignment, the statutes of this state defined casing head gas, and it was defined as gas or vapor indigenous to an oil stratum and produced from that stratum with oil. My client's position is that if you apply that statutory definition, what happened when the reservation was made is it created a horizontal severance of the rights, much like what sometimes happens when a lessee has the rights to all depths and somebody wants to drill shallow and he wants to keep the deep rights. He can convey out the right to complete above 5,000 feet and reserve the right to complete deeper. Except in this case, it wasn't stated in terms of a specific depth. It was stated in terms of oil and casing head gas rights, so that you don't know until you drill on the property, perhaps, where that demarcation is. But you're still limited if you're limited to oil and casing head gas rights to completing in the gas stratum, pardon me, the oil stratum. You have to complete in the area that produces oil. And if you complete in some different area that produces gas only, then you are trespassing on the rights of the party that owns the gas rights. Now, again, what is the meaning of the instrument? The alternative explanation or definition, let's talk about that, Energy Agri's position. Their position is that casing head gas means all gas produced from an oil well at any depth, including a dry gas zone that's up above the oil. By statute, an oil well simply has to produce at least one barrel of oil for every 100,000 cubic feet of gas. So they say as long as they keep their ratio to meet that standard, that they own all the well from the well, all the gas from the well, even if they come up the hole and produce gas out of a zone that has no oil. By way of example, if they can find 3 barrels a day of oil in the bottom of the well, then they have a license to come up into the gas zone and produce 300,000 cubic feet of gas a day from that well. And Energy Agri even took that farther. Their position was if they can't find 3 barrels of oil in the bottom of the well, there's no problem because they can put a refrigeration unit, sometimes referred to as an LTX unit, on the surface, take the gas stream that's coming up out of the well, chill it to minus 25 degrees Fahrenheit, liquefy part of it, and count that liquid as oil, so that even if they don't have that 3 barrels of black oil in the, or liquid oil in the well, they can manufacture it out of the gas stream and therefore keep producing as much gas as they want to. Under that reading of casing head gas, you get to a kind of an unusual property rights situation. Under their position, Amarillo Oil and our predecessor, who produced the gas well for 30 years before Energy Agri ever appeared on the scene, had no exclusive right to the gas zone. All we had was the right to compete with Energy Agri. In other words, they're saying that they have the right to produce the same gas on the same lease at the same depth through their well as they conveyed, or their predecessor conveyed to us back in 1953. I think that is a strange way to divide property rights. But if you consider the other part of the background, that is the regulatory framework that existed at the time of the assignment and still is in existence today, it gets even stranger. Because the field rules since the 1930s have only allowed one gas well to attract the size of this tract. So the most that the gas rights owner could ever drill is that one original well. On the other hand, the oil rights owner had the right to drill to 10-acre spacing. So if Energy Agri chose, they could drill not just 2 wells, but they could drill 4 more. Plus, there was no requirement that the oil well have any spacing distance from the gas well. You could drill as close to that gas well as you physically were able to locate your well. So under their theory, all we got by buying the existing gas rights in the well was the right to produce, was a non-exclusive right to compete for the same gas at a potential 6-to-1 disadvantage. They could put 6 wells where we could put 1, and they say they could complete at the same level and drain the same gas. I submit that that doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. It didn't make sense to the Amarillo Court of Appeals in the next case that came along after the one before this court. In Dorchester versus Harlow, which is pending on application before this court, a different panel of the same court completely rejected that approach and held that the gas rights owner had the exclusive right to produce the gas zone, and the oil rights owner could not come up and perforate in the gas zone, even if he had oil down deeper. Since that time, in this past December 1988, another panel of the Amarillo Court of Appeals has decided Jenkins versus Bryant, and we're submitting a letter brief with a citation to that opinion, which follows the Harlow case again, and simply says that you cannot lump all these together. An oil well is limited to the oil zone. Even more recently, in January, in a conservation proceeding, The Railroad Commission has issued an order, which is not final yet, it's pending on rehearing, interpreting the conservation laws and saying that you cannot, an oil well cannot complete in the gas zone in the Panhandle Field. Simply relying on statutes that have been in effect when this assignment was created up until today. It doesn't make sense to think that the original owners of the tract, the original owners of the rights, the oil and gas rights, intended to divide it up so that the gas right was virtually meaningless, so that the oil operator had the exclusive right to complete in the oil zone and produce oil and casing head gas. But all the gas rights owner got under that interpretation is a non-exclusive license to produce gas at a potential disadvantage of one well to six.
Counsel, you haven't had a citation of Jenkins versus Breyer.
Your Honor, I don't think it's reported yet. I got it out of Westlaw, but it's a December opinion.
Which court?
Amarillo Court of Appeals. To me, the argument that Amarillo Oil has always made sounds a little bit like saying what's mine is mine, but what's yours mine. What's yours is also mine, mine too. I submit that the court should, at the minimum, reverse the dismissal of the case for want of jurisdiction, hold that the title question is for the courts, the question of what does the instrument mean is for the courts, and secondly, that the ownership here of gas doesn't depend on just the happenstance of whether it's produced through a gas well or an oil well, but it depends on whether the gas is produced with oil from an oil stratum, or whether it's produced from a gas-only stratum. The next question is, was there evidence to support the jury finding? Or the question is, was the brown dolomite capable of producing oil in the Energy Agri wells? Or did it conclusively show that the brown dolomite is a gas stratum? I guess I'd refer the court first to the first diagram, which I have on the easel. This is the situation showing how the wells were originally completed. The Amarillo Oil well part is the first well here, and that shows that the cumulative production of that well over its history, which was undisputed, was 1.7 billion cubic feet of gas. And then there was an evidentiary dispute at trial as to whether or not it produced approximately a tenth of a barrel of oil during the 33 days prior to the testing. The second diagram shows the Energy Agri Kimberlin number 2 well, and its original completion was only in the granite zone down deeper. And it reported an initial test of 7 barrels of oil and gas too small to measure. Similarly, the number 3 well, 16 barrels of oil and gas too small to measure. The second diagram shows what happened thereafter. First thing that happened in the middle well, the number 2 well, Energy Agri went in and recompleted, added holes in the pipe, perforations up in the gas zone, up in the brown dolomite. In addition, we've shown on the surface a little box between the two wells. They installed a device called a liquid extraction unit, LTX refrigeration unit. There are various terms for it. It would chill the gas that was coming out of their wells to minus 25 degrees and liquefy a part of it. At this point, Amarillo Oil filed suit, and they obtained a court order allowing them to test the wells. And on that diagram on the easel, I've shown what the results of those tests were, averaged on a daily basis. They show that, first of all, on the number 2 well, the well in the middle, there were two tests run. On the left-hand side, it shows the results of the test of the entire well bore, both the granite and the brown dolomite all open together. And on that test, the result was 375,000 cubic feet of gas and a fourth of a barrel of oil a day. Then Amarillo Oil got court's permission to seal off the upper zone, the brown dolomite, from the lower zone. And the test results were zero oil and 412,000 cubic feet of gas a day. And finally, the number 3 well, which was never completed up high, but because of an injunction, a temporary injunction the court issued, the test shows half a barrel of oil and a little over 1.5 cubic feet of gas. The purpose of the test, obviously, was to physically measure, to get the most direct evidence that was possible of what the brown dolomite was actually capable of producing, whether it could produce oil or not produce oil. And it is the only evidence of what those wells could produce in this case, certainly the only direct evidence of what they could produce. No party did any other test, requested any test, requested any modification of the test, or filed any objection with the trial court to correct that. Energy Agri's position at the trial was that the liquefied gas, the substance coming out of the LTX unit, was oil. And as a matter of fact, that device was able of extracting 6 barrels a day of liquid from each of those two wells. There was certainly no evidence of any kind that the brown dolomite or any part of the wellbore produced black oil in the area of 6 barrels a day. On appeal, after a favorable verdict to Energy Agri, they argued, first of all, by the time it got on appeal, we had Railroad Commission decisions, and ultimately we had the Austin Court of Appeals decision holding that liquid extraction unit liquefied gas is not oil. So instead of relying on that, they have relied on what other evidence they could find in the record to support the jury verdict, even though the jury's finding of 6 barrels a day could only be traced to the LTX liquid. There's been no suggestion that there was any evidence to show that production from any other source or an inference.
Which case was it that the Austin Court of Appeals had?
They had the appeal from the first Railroad Commission hearing that dealt with whether under the conservation rules of the state the liquid out of that LTX unit was oil or not. I think it is Huffo Oils versus Railroad Commission. The first thing
that's one we have pending too.
Yes, sir. I think the court has pending the appeal from that first commission hearing in Dorchester versus Harlow, or Harlow versus Dorchester. The evidence that Energy Agri has now pointed to support the jury finding is, first of all, some testimony that the gas well, when they examined it right before the trial, had some oil in a scrubber unit that was knocked out of the gas stream before it went into the compressor. And I think the testimony was that they found 3 to 4 gallons of oil accumulated over a 30-day period prior to the test. There was a dispute as to whether that was lubricating oil or produced oil, but in any event, 3 or 4 gallons over 30 days is about 3/1000ths of a barrel a day, or about a nickel's worth of oil. Even if you assume that and give the respondent the benefit of every inference, that is not meaningful oil production by any standard. It certainly isn't 100,000 to 1, and it's just insignificant in terms of determining whether or not the brown dolomite is an oil stratum or a gas stratum. The second main area that the respondent relies on to support the verdict is expert testimony. But the only expert witness that purported to give an opinion on what this well will produce, these Energy Agri wells, was Mr. Michael, Dan Michael. And he testified that he thought the brown dolomite on this lease in these wells would produce oil. But his only basis was that he heard that the court test ordered by the court in this case resulted in a production rate of 1.33 barrels of oil from the brown dolomite. In fact, the test that he's talking about, the 1.33 barrels, was produced on the test of the number two well when the whole well bore was open for production. The separate test of just the brown dolomite resulted in zero oil. So, and nothing's been, the other side has not pointed to any evidence to contradict that interpretation. Mr. Michael's statement was based on being confused about what test he was talking about. He thought that 1.33 was from the brown dolomite only, when in fact it was from the entire well bore, including the deeper zone that had tested some oil. It seems clear that any reasonable view of the record, the evidence in this case, that the jury simply found that the LTX liquid was oil, in spite of the court's instruction about what oil is. That's the only basis that you could reach, the only basis that you could find 6 barrels a day. I think that the facts in this case, and I'd like to come back to the instrument itself, highlight the unreasonableness of their Energy Agri's reading of casing head gas. Because the parties knew that the brown dolomite was a gas stratum, they couldn't have intended that a few barrels of oil from the deeper zone or a few drops of oil from the brown dolomite itself would have given the oil rights owner a license to produce the gas and compete with the gas rights owner.
Yeah, let me answer just one question for you. 6 barrels of liquefied gas would be how much in 1,000 cubic feet? You know?
Your Honor, in the brief, I know we put in how many thousands of cubic feet it reduces when you take out that much liquid. It seems to me like it's in the order of 12 or 15,000 cubic feet of gas a day less when you remove six barrels of oil, but I'd have to double check that.
I think it's significant.
May it please the court, Mr. Burris Spigley and Mr. Paul Nisley will present arguments for responding.
I'm trying to get to approach the bench. I'm like that fish out of water. This is an oil and gas case, and that might surprise you, but I was not hired simply because of my influence with this court. I tried this case in the trial court and have been involved in this litigation since its outset. And these are called the Stowers cases, no kin to Stowers Furniture Company, nor the principals, they're not similar. I'll not ask this court for a quick decision. The judgment was entered in the 100th District Court back in December of 1982, argument in the Court of Appeals in December of 85. We asked for a quick decision. A year and a half later, they rendered an opinion, and we argued this, I believe, in December of 87, and asked for a quick opinion, and we're arguing the case again. So I'm not going to bring bad luck on myself or Mr. Reed if we joined in that request. My role in this case is to lay the predicate for Mr. Nively to succinctly argue the points of law that are before these courts, and you'll see the difference between our position and Mr. Beasley's. If I can have some help and have the first chart put on the board. We're dealing with the Panhandle field, literally the West Panhandle field, and it's important that the geographic location, both as from a bird's eye view and from a cross-section view, be appreciated by the court, and I'll not dwell upon this. The first four of these were not evidence exhibits in the trial court. They're simply demonstrative exhibits to point to this court, and I'll point out whether there's any controversy. The Panhandle field is outlined in blue there, and if I can have the next exhibit. This is a sample of a seismographic finding of the cross of a cross section, so that we're dealing with, if I may approach this, what is called the brown dolomite. Now I can't even reach on the cross section there. Let me have the next. Yes. The controversy in this case, and I think all of the cases coming out of the Panhandle field, deal with the brown dolomite, and that's this area. Figurative is shown. Now this is the exhibit, one exhibit I think counsel will disagree with, and I understand that. Let me point out where the counsel will probably disagree with us. It is our position, representing the producers, that we have a right to produce oil and casing head gas from an oil bore, and we have a right to explore for that at any level. It is Amarillo Oil Company, and they're playing for the defendant. That's where I have trouble remembering our roles. But it is their position that they have the exclusive rights to the brown dolomite, that's theirs. We don't have any right to even explore. And as an excuse, they say, because there's no oil there. And I think this is where the trial courts in all of these cases have gone off on an erroneous basis, assuming that there has to be oil right at the site of the bore. But it is our position that there are places where there's no oil in the brown dolomite and places where there is oil in the brown dolomite. We're entitled to pursue that. Secondly, from this Amarillo Oil Company gas. It's an open well, you see. That's why there's no casing from this point through the door line. It's just open well, and they suck that gas out of there on demand. The evidence that Mr. Reedley was very blindly referring to there was from one witness who said that there was oil, black crude oil, and not just in the minute amount that he referred to there, but oil which is oil and not oil from the rig found in that. Next item, please. The thing that is important in this case is that the party's rights in this case are determined by the law, by the facts, and by the documents. And Mr. Reedley was correct when he said this is the first of the title cases, because to determine the rights of these parties, we must look to the oil and gas lease from which these parties' rights arose, and that provides a reference to the oil produced, the gas, and it says gas from each well where gas only is found. Then what gives the right to casing head gas is in paragraph 3, and this is an exhibit. This is Defendant's Exhibit 26, which the jury had, and it says down there that the royalty of 1/8, where is it here, products, oh, from gasoline or other products manufactured and sold by the lessee from the gas produced from any oil, from the gas produced from any oil well. And that has to go into the equation of determining what is casing head gas in this case, and likewise in the other related cases. Then there's another exhibit that deals with, and this is a chart that was not introduced in evidence but was used in the argument with the jury, because it brings together the facts of this case, because the rights of the parties come from this oil and gas lease, the Hodges lease. And these are the 1, 2, 3, what I just referred to that gave the parties rights. Then we deal with the assignment and the reservation. We deal with the transfer and the farm out agreement by which Energy Agri had the right to explore for oil, and it includes, and they will make thorough tests from all formations containing a showing of oil. So they not only had a right, but they were mandated by their lease to explore in all formations. Now, if I may remove this exhibit and put back the exhibit. Not only does the law destroy Amarillo Oil Companies, and I think subsequently Dorchester and all the other gas companies, because this truly is the old battle between the sheep men and the cowmen, between the cowmen and the farmers. This is the gas companies and the people that own the property and that produce the oil, on the other hand. And that's where the battle lines really are drawn, and they're drawn on the definitions of casing head gas and the definitions of oil, and it is what applies. But running through all these cases is the gas companies claim that this is our territory. You can't invade our territory. That's the predicate for the argument of Mr. Knightley.
May it please the court.
Mr. Wrigley's position is that our title casing head gas is limited to a definition set out in the statute, gas and or vapors indigenous to an oil stratum produced from such stratum of oil. The problem with that is it ignores the fact that we're dealing with documents, lease instruments that use terms that have been used in oil and gas leases in the Panhandle field since the late 1800s, early 1900s, long before the statutes were even enacted, using the terms oil, gas from a well where gas only is found, or gas produced from an oil well. And that's the terms that were used in the original oil and gas lease. In fact, this even leaves off some other language. It indicates that the original lease talked about the right to prospect, explore, produce, and remove oil, gas, casing head gas, and all petroleum products. And then it set out the three royalty interests that are shown on Defendant's Exhibit 26, in which the term gas from any oil well is used instead of the term casing head gas. Under this lease, those terms are used interchangeably.
Counsel, is there any evidence that if you drill right into the top of the salt dome and produced only gas, that you would get no liquids at all?
In the original virgin reservoir, that's what the dry gas rights really referred to, was the original virgin reservoir gas cap, which was dry gas separated from the oil at natural conditions. That's the natural gas that the gas rights owners were entitled to and still are entitled to. The problem is, that's all gone, or virtually all gone in every lease. And the gas that is being produced, not only from the oil wells, but the gas that is being produced from the gas wells, is not the same gas that was originally in the gas cap at the virgin reservoir conditions. It's wet gas. It's gas that has a much higher specific gravity than the original dry gas. It's gas that contains components of the crude oil that have bubbled up from the oil in the reservoir due to the reduction in pressure from human production. And that's exactly what we're saying when we define the terms oil and casing head gas. The oil produced through the liquid recovery unit, or the LTX unit, is components of the crude oil that were at virgin reservoir conditions in the liquid part of the reservoir. And it's the phenomenon that I'm describing and that we rely on this case, and that we have expert testimony support in this case from Mr. L.R. Vogt, is that the liquid recovery unit liquids contain those components of crude oil. And there are actual samples and evidence which are now before the court of the actual liquids that were produced and analyzed.
But there is very little black oil in the brown dolomite, or not?
It varies from one spot to another. There have been millions of barrels of oil produced from the brown dolomite at the Panhandle field. But there are now, the gas components now contain parts of the crude oil because of that reduction in pressure from millions and millions of gallons of millions and millions of cubic feet of gas and millions of barrels of crude oil that have reduced the pressure and now caused the gas that was in the oil. And it's like the example Mr. Reeve gave of the Coke bottle. When you open a Coke, you get that fizz in the face. That's the oil. That wet part coming out is the oil. And even though it also contains some of that gas cap natural gas, it's casing head gas in its totality, because casing head gas is defined under the common law decisions of this court as part oil and part gas. That's what it is. And I have had one of the clerks here distribute to the court copies of the Reynolds decision from the Commission of Appeals in 1928, construing a lease with exactly the same terminology used in this lease, and describing in extreme, at great length and extreme detail, the phenomenon which I'm describing to the court of the gas bubbling out with little bubble films, like a bubble that you blow as a kid out of a little things with bubbles. You get a film there that's got liquid in it. And when those bubbles come up from the oil in the reservoir, that's still oil. It doesn't lose its legal characteristic as oil because of a phase change due to human intervention. So what we say, and what the position we took in the trial court, was that we are entitled to show and have the jury pass on that the characterization of those liquids as oil. The problem is the trial court adopted Amarillo Oil's theory of the case, relying on a statutory definition of casing head gas, which, by the way, was never even submitted to the jury. We finally said, if that's the theory the case is being tried on, let's use all the statutory definitions of oil, gas, and casing head gas and let the jury decide. But the court did not submit those definitions. The court submitted a definition which required that oil be liquid in the reservoir, liquid in the wellbore, and liquid as it's produced from the wellbore, and cannot be reduced back to recover those liquids that have vaporized. And as we objected strenuously to that definition. And so that's the posture in which the case comes before this court. But there is independent evidence to support the jury's findings, quite apart from the liquid recovery unit liquids. As Mr. Spivey pointed out, there was direct testimony about the production of crude oil, black crude oil, liquid black crude oil, through the scrubber on Amarillo Oil Company's gas well. The man who made the scrubber and installed it at Amarillo Oil Company's request, just before this lawsuit started, coincidentally, to enhance the production of gas on their well, came and testified that, wait a minute, when I went back and checked that scrubber, it contained black crude oil that had come up in the gas stream and just dropped out. Free liquids in that gas stream. That's the same oil we're talking about.
But if I understood you correctly, when these wells were producing originally out of the brown dolomite, they only produced dry gas and no oil.
It is their position that their gas well never produced any oil. As we have discovered, that over time, that gas keeps getting wetter and wetter, and pretty soon they're getting the oil. Mr. Reavis says, that we take the position, what's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine, too. I take the position that's what the gas companies are doing. They've had their dry gas. Now they want the wet gas, which contains the components of the crude oil. But this court, years and years ago, decided that the title to minerals in the ground is not something which changes due to change in composition in the reservoir. And that's the Reynolds case and the cases that are cited in support of that. I would urge the court also to look carefully at the amicus brief filed by Celeron Oil Company in this case, which also discusses in detail those cases. So in terms of the, we were willing to fight this battle on either ground they wanted to. They wanted to go with statutory definitions. We were willing to go to the jury with statutory definitions, but they refused to do that. They want to go by regulatory definitions, what the Railroad Commission allows or doesn't allow in the wellbore. We produced testimony from Mr. John Rogers, who was the district director of District 10, responsible for this whole panhandle area, who testified that oil producers and gas producers at that time had the lawful right to perforate their wells at any position vertically within that reservoir, to produce either oil or gas from any vertical position within that reservoir, and to, so long as they maintained a ratio so as to establish either a gas well or an oil well, they were entitled to keep the products from that well. The gas producer could produce some oil through his gas well under the Railroad Commission's conservation guidelines. And we said ours is an oil well. It was classified by the Railroad Commission as an oil well. It produces within the ratio of 100,000 to 1 to be an oil well under the statutes and under the regulations. And we're entitled, as Mr. Rogers testified, to produce from any position in that reservoir. The title documents don't talk about zones or horizons or formations or separate the title of these parties by horizontal slices of the reservoir. This is a common reservoir. It's an associated oil and gas reservoir, and we're entitled, just like anybody else in that field is, to produce wherever we can find our oil and casing head gas.
Would that give you a 6-to-1 advantage, as they claim?
The spacing rules are, again, set by the Railroad Commission. As a regulatory matter, we in terms of a 640-acre section, my understanding is that's correct in terms of the spacing rules. But the spacing rules are subject to change by the Railroad Commission, too, on application and protest. But that doesn't change the title. The title to the oil and the title of the casing head gas established by these lease instruments is based on how those minerals, as they existed in the ground before man's intervention, started changing up the phases. And that's what we've asked the court to declare as the title doctrine.
Doesn't the LTX unit alter that state?
It alters the state just like all the other kinds of intervention alter the state. It recovers those components of crude oil that vaporized over the decades that have occurred since production started.
But your position would be that you could not use the production from the LTX unit to change the nature of what's coming out of the bore.
Not to change the nature, to change the legal ownership of what's coming out of the bore. The legal ownership of the oil never changed. It was oil when it was at virgin conditions. The fact that it bubbled out and vaporized and was recovered by refrigeration does not change the fact that it's still oil. And the oil producers and the royalty owners still own that and still are entitled to have royalties paid on that.
But at the time it comes up, even though it may once have been liquid, at the time it comes up the bore, it's now gaseous.
Wet gas, yes, sir. And the question is, I guess, if you want to get to an ultimate issue in all these cases, at what phase are those title determinations made? Can your title change because the phase has changed?
The phase in the field.
Yes, sir. Phase in
the field. So your position is, even though the nature, because of the nature, even though the nature of the substance has changed in the ground over time, the title is the same.
Correct. And that's based on this court's longstanding theory of title of minerals in place. So what the Court of Appeals did was dismiss this case for lack of jurisdiction under the theory that Amarillo Oil Company brought forward, that under the Railroad Commission's rules and regulations and under the statutes, we had no right to go into the brown dolomite. And they said, if you're really challenging the well classification and the Railroad Commission's regulation of those classifications, you're in the wrong place. But I would ask this court to go beyond that and to address, based on common law principles and based on the terms of these lease instruments, which are in line with lease instruments throughout the history of the Panhandle Field, to declare that oil means that which was in the liquid phase of the reservoir at virgin conditions, that it does not lose its legal characterization, and again, consistent with the Reynolds decision, that it is appropriate to recover those liquids by whatever means necessary to recover control over that which the oil owners and royalty owners do own. We would ask that the court declare title in accordance with our request, and the alternative, we'd ask that the court affirm the dismissal for lack of jurisdiction based on the theory in which Amarillo Oil Company approached the court. I'd be glad to address any further questions.
May it please the court, Mr. Tom Reifley will present petitioner's rebuttal argument.
Let me first try to address Justice Heck's question. The vaporized oil theory that we've heard a lot about, the argument as I understand it goes something like this, that part of what is in the gas zone today and what we're producing from our gas well at some point in the past, in the 1920s or 1910, used to be part of the oil, that it was at a higher pressure in the oil zone. I guess I have two answers to that. The first one would be to consider a hypothetical type of situation. I think it's pretty well established that slant holes are not legal. If you drill a well and slant it so the bottom is on someone else's tract, you cannot do that. That's a trespass and a violation of his property rights. It seems to me their argument on vaporized oil is somewhat akin to a slant hole operator coming in and arguing that, yeah, I slanted it and I put it on your tract, but I'm just getting started drilling out here and you've been producing for years. I think you've been draining me, and I'm just trying to recover some of the oil that's already drained off. There is a rule of capture in this state. If you're completed within your property rights on your tract at a depth you're entitled to complete at, then you can produce what you can produce. But you can't complete where you're not legally able to complete. Another problem with arguing the source, the original source of what you're producing, is that I suppose I could go out and lease dinosaur and prehistoric plants rights from these mineral owners and then argue that every oil producer and every gas producer is producing what I own because it all used to be something that was living or walking around. I mean, that just doesn't make sense in terms of the practicalities of the business and what we're dealing with. And my final response to that is the effect of that argument. It sounds pretty good the first time you hear it, but no one says, they don't say, and we certainly agree, you cannot tell what molecule in the gas zone came from the oil. You can't identify that. They could be going either direction at various times. And you certainly can't control what comes out of the gas zone if you put a well down there and produce it. So the net effect of saying that because some of this gas used to be oil, they argue is simply that they now have permission to produce all the gas they can produce out of the gas zone. So you go back to the intent of the instrument. Could the parties reasonably have meant that in 1953 when they drilled a commercial gas well producing 12 million cubic feet a day on test? Could they have meant to leave it open to the parties to come back later and say, well, we're drilling oil wells and there's a little bit of oil down here, but we're going to come up here and produce a lot of gas because we think we can prove that in 1920 some of that gas, we can't identify the molecules or the amount, or we can't just selectively produce those, but some of the gas came from the oil zone. And I always come back to the intent of the parties. What is a reasonable interpretation of the instrument? And I just submit that cannot be a reasonable interpretation. That just guts the gas rights. It makes it meaningless in terms of the exclusive ownership, the economics at the time, and what was really going on. The second question I'd like to address, that both Mr. Snisley and Mr. Spivey raised, is their reliance on the original lease instrument. They say that because the original lease had a different royalty provision for gas produced from an oil well and gas produced from a gas well, that somehow controls this case. First of all, how the lessor had royalty paid, in my view, has nothing to do with what rights Mr. Housley assigned and what rights he reserved. The point is that he didn't use those terms. He didn't say, I assign the Amarillo oil, all gas produced from the gas well, and I reserve all oil produced from an oil well. He used a term, casing head gas, that had been defined by statute since 1935. In limited casing head gas, the gas produced from a gas stratum with oil. Secondly, even under the Housley lease, or under the original lease, the law at that time and today makes it illegal for an oil well to produce in the gas zone. And the commission has recently reaffirmed their interpretation of these same statutes. So even if you were dealing with an assignment of all gas produced from an oil well, I think a reasonable inference the court would make is that it's gas produced from a legally completed oil well. And I didn't use that terminology in any event.
Let me ask you a question that I'm not sure about yet. If you've got production from the Dolomite and originally produced only gas, as the field gets older, will it produce more liquids?
I think, Your Honor, there is evidence that over time the gas zone has gotten richer, that it's still coming up as a gas, it's in the gaseous phase, and there are various theories for that. One theory is that there is a film of oil on all that rock because of the way it was laid down originally, of oil. But it is so thin and so spread out that it cannot be produced by any technology. And as the pressure goes down, some of that, the gas that's trapped in that comes out, and the elements of that enrich the gas. The other theory that's been advanced and that Energy Agri advances is that enrichment is the result of, as the pressure drops, some of the gaseous phase or the elements of the deeper oil come out and migrate up and mix with it.
But you're saying that makes no difference.
That's right, Your Honor. In terms of the history of this lease and the reasonable interpretation of the instrument, it results in the same problem that is the basic issue I tried to address in opening argument, and that is it does not make any sense to say that you were dividing the property rights so that the guy that was buying the existing well and the only rights that had been proved to have any value at that time, that he got nothing other than the right to compete for gas in that zone at a disadvantage that made his investment, I would think, almost worthless in terms of what could have happened if anybody had thought of that at that time. Mr. Nisley also says that there is other law, case law that he's relying on that overrides the statutory definition of casing head gas, and we've covered that in the brief. I don't think that's a fair characterization. All of these old cases that talk about casing head gas equaling gas from an oil well don't address this issue of somebody coming in and perforating above the oil and the gas. And a lot of the statements in the case show the courts were assuming that the well was completed in an oil zone. In the Reynolds case, one of the things it says is that casing head gas is in liquid form in the earth. Now, if that's the mentality of the court, that's what it's thinking about, yes, if the gas is coming out of an oil well that's completed in an oil zone, it will be casing head gas. But no, there was no case before the court of somebody coming in, completing in the oil zone for oil, and coming up where they found only gas. And finally, Mr. Spivey's point at the beginning, that his client had the right to explore for oil wherever it existed. And I don't contest that he had the right to drill and test for oil. And if he can prove that there's some oil in the Brown Dolomite or in any other depth, he's entitled to complete at the depth he can prove there's oil. But certainly that wasn't the case in this situation. He drilled, he didn't test, there was no evidence that his client tested the Brown Dolomite separately. They simply went down, completed in the oil zone, and then later came back up and mixed it all together. So that the only way my client could get any evidence was to get a court order allowing it to separately test that zone. And keeping in mind that zone had been produced by a gas well, producing gas only continuously for 30 years with no oil. And if there's any general understanding in the oil and gas industry, it's that if you produce at the same level in the same reservoir in close proximity, you're going to get the same substance because gas is lightest, it rises to the top, then oil, and then if there's water, water beneath. Arguing the evidentiary point, obviously, could get pretty involved. We've tried to set that out all in the brief, and I would refer to the court to the brief. I recognize that there is a heavy burden arguing that the evidence conclusively establishes a proposition contrary to what the jury said, but I think in this case it's met, and it's met in part by the problem of the LTX liquid, and careful analysis of all the evidence, I think, requires the conclusion that Amarillo Oil, pardon me, Energy Agri, was completed in a gas-only zone and was trespassing on my client's rights.
Anything?